there is no presentation, guys. So they don't have one. Okay. All right, let's take our seats. All right, our next guest is with us, Debbie Hughes from the American Red Cross, and she's here with her colleague Monica, right? Amber, sorry.
No problem.
Sorry. Boy, I got that way wrong. So Amber and Debbie are going to talk about a proposed nonprofit constituency, right? Okay, so why don't you guys just take the floor? Go ahead. You have to unpress that button to activate your microphone.
Now we're good? Okay, thank you, everybody. Hi, my name is Debbie Hughes, and I'm one of the board-appointed GNSO counselors representing the non-commercial stakeholders group. I was appointed back in October to increase participation of not-for-profit organizations in ICANN policy development. And to that end, it's my delight to introduce to you Amber Sterling, who will be talking to you a little bit about the efforts of several not-for-profit organizations to create a unique constituency within the NCSG for not-for-profit organizations. And so without further ado.
Thank you. Again, my name is Amber Sterling, and I'm going to read for you, because I don't have it memorized yet, give me another 5 hours, a very short excerpt from our charter to kind of give a little more context to what we're hoping to do. And as Debbie said, it's going to be a constituency group within the NCSG dedicated to the needs of not-for-profit organizations. And what we plan on focusing on, or will be focusing on, is the impact of DNS policies and their efforts and their effects on the operational readiness and implementation of non-commercial missions and objectives. And our members, MPOC members, rely on the Internet and DNS policies to provide valuable services to their communities. And what we would like to say right now is that without you, we literally could not do our jobs. We could not have, the not-for-profit community could not exist without registrars. It just, imagine if we operated like we did in 1990. Nothing would get done. And so what we hope, and so what we're hoping to do with this new constituency group is focus on the operational concerns of our organizations and how we affect our missions within the Internet and the DNS space. And so with that very brief introduction, we were wondering if you guys had any questions or concerns you wanted to raise with us in this forum?
I'll take a cue, Stefan, and then I'm putting myself in queue too. Stat? Okay, got it. Stefan, go ahead.
Yeah, Amber, Debbie, hi. Can you just explain for people in this room who are probably not as close to the GNSO process itself, why your stakeholder group, the NCSG, would need to splinter or do more constituencies or, you know, create more subgroups within its own group, just so that people understand that context?
Thank you, Stefan, for that great question. As you may or may not be aware, as it is a different house, the NCSG, definitely for the last year and for the couple of years preceding it, have been focused and very well focused on the rights and needs of the individual end user, domain registrant, and internet operator. And those needs, as you can imagine, sometimes dramatically conflict with the needs of an organization, such as a nonprofit organization. And so what we're hoping to do is form a space within the NCSG that is dedicated to the organizational concern versus the individual end user concern. And Debbie, do you have?
Yeah, and I think what I would add, Stefan, is that in addition to that distinction, I think the other important distinction is that the members who are organizational members of this new proposed constituency are official representatives of their organization. The individuals who will be selected as a designated representative, their alternate, will have the ability to represent their organization, so you won't see a lot of this I'm speaking in my own capacity kind of stuff. As you notice, you probably never heard me say that because I serve and volunteer here at the pleasure of the American National Red Cross, so I don't have the luxury to be able to talk about things about which I can't. And so we're limited in a lot of the things that we can and can't engage with. And so the distinction is that you may see some not-for-profit organizations that are currently engaged in ICANN talking about particular advocacy-type issues, which are probably important for their organization. But what our organizations are going to be talking about is why the stability of the DNS helps me collect funds or deliver life-saving training. I'm not going to be talking about whether or not I think it's important to go, you know, get blood served or, you know, collect blood or you know, the educational activities that we're doing. I'm going to be talking specifically about why the DNS is important for me to effectuate my infrastructure. And so I think that's the distinction. We're talking about how these organizations use the DNS from an infrastructure perspective and from an official capacity, not individuals.
Shoot. All right, good, thanks. Okay, Staten. That was your question? McKaylee. Everybody had the same question. Anybody have another question? Yeah, Stefan.
So I don't want to steal everybody's questions. So, you know,
but, you're batting 1,000 so far.
So the next question must be then, what happens now? What's the process for this constituency to be created?
We filed our charter to the board November 2nd, 2010, and it was submitted for public comment December 1st. The comment period is closing January 23rd. And sometimes I want to say by hook or crook, but, you know, probably in all honesty, ICAM policy and procedures, we have our fingers crossed that it will be before the board for a vote in San Francisco.
And we're working, just to also let you know, we are working with the NCSG Executive Committee and the current non-commercial users constituency this week in really positive conversations, trying to move forward not just a way to recognize this constituency, but also to get their proposed charter approved by the board sooner rather than later, so that we're trying to work with the SIC and the board to try to move things along.
Elliot? Preferable, please.
So I'm still a bit confused, but kind of going back to the first question. Could you maybe give an example or tell us a story of, you know, I mean, we all need stable DNS infrastructure, and I, you know, certainly think you're all doing great work. Can you give us an example or tell us a story of where your needs might be unique from some other groups? I mean, I heard individuals versus users, and, you know, I think each would say, yes, we need stable DNS.
I'll give you a great example. Right. Recommendation 6, morality and public disorder. Disorder. Oops. Need I say more? No.
This is public disorder right here.
Valid concerns. For many, not on my checklist of things about which are important to my organization. I thought you were asking about differences. I'm sorry.
Yeah, differences.
But so that's an example of a difference.
So I'd love to hear things that are, you know, sort of the things that are important to you that you don't feel are represented.
Oh, that aren't represented. So I think one of the things that I would move towards more conversations about are how not-for-profit organizations, for example, who use domain names need to improve, like, for example, security on their websites and how to make their transactions more secure and how to make sure that, you know, a lot of the technical stuff that's going on here in ICANN, there's not a lot of not-for-profit organizational participation in those committees and those work groups, and that's an area where I know I would like to even get more participation in and to get organizations that have that expertise, because it impacts how they work. So I would say that, you know, DNS threats, perhaps, you know, in the past 2-3 years, maybe the NCSG has been involved in some of those work groups, but not maybe as much as we would like, because we think the threats to our infrastructure online are, like, predominant. So getting more organizations involved in those types of work groups, I think, is a different focus than some of the things I've been seeing with the current groups. They're more interested maybe in some of these other things. I can say one area that we share is, you know, support for outreach and communication to organizations that are in developing areas and evolving economies and evolving areas. That's one thing that we, you know, very much aligned with the current NCUC and NCSG folks, but maybe what organizations we would try to target might be different. They may focus on a certain type, and we might focus on another type of not-for-profit organization.
We're really short on time. I think maybe one of the questions that might help clarify is what would your proposed stakeholder group be uniquely capable of doing that can't be done now because it doesn't exist inside ICANN?
Sure.
Go ahead.
What we hope to bring to the table is, and I'm repeating myself now, but the organizational perspective. And can you repeat the question? I am terribly sorry.
What are we bringing differently?
What's happening or not happening in ICANN now that demands the creation of your stakeholder group? I mean, what are you alone capable of doing that none of the rest of us can?
Well, I can say one thing from my years' involvement is that I see that not-for-profit organizations are kind of uniquely situated in ICANN. We work with registries. We work with registrars all the time. We work with companies. They support us. So we're able to probably see things from a different way. So when an issue comes, our perspective is going to be, you know, how do we find a middle ground, or how do we find consensus in ICANN-ese, right? How do we find a consensus that makes sense, that impacts not just my silo, but I understand that I work with these other silos. And so what I'm hoping is that what we're bringing that's different, or the new thing that our constituency can bring, is that when we're talking to registrars or when we're talking to business owners, that in the back of our mind, we're reminding ourselves that we're all part of one internet, because we really do literally rely on the services you all provide. So I hope that kind of answers the question. I mean, the perspective that that we're able to hopefully bridge some gaps that, or bridge some gaffes that have been there, perhaps because people have been so entrenched, and we don't see ourselves as being as entrenched, perhaps.
Okay. Adrian?
Hello. Deb, you mentioned that you felt the nonprofits, you were talking about physical infrastructure and your concerns around DNS issues and so on and so forth, they are exactly the same as any other commercial business. And in fact, small businesses, large businesses, you know, their nonprofits fit into both as far as size of organisation and infrastructure requirements and utilisation of the DNS, they are identical. There is nothing that separates you from, given by the fact that you are registered as a not-for-profit organisation, anything to do with infrastructure. You use infrastructure in exactly the same way. So I thought that was when Elliot asked you to provide a difference, that was, to me, a bit of a misnomer. I don't understand that one at all. I think you are not unique in that circumstance, and you can go to the business constituency and go and talk to another organisation there that represent those groups in that respect, and you would be welcomed. Thanks.
Tim? Are you done? Okay. Anyone else? JC?
Hello. Okay. Just a follow up on that general question, really. Aren't you worried about the precedent that it could create? I mean, there are valid points being made here on the fact that maybe you could fit really well in an existing constituency, and you're telling us that there are outstanding points that warrants that you would be outside of the existing status. What are we supposed to do? What is the community supposed to do when we have, I don't know, bankers or, you know, any other valid community coming to us and say, let's extend the constituency process?
Whoops, sorry. So to tie in your comment with the point that Adrian made, is that we couldn't join the commercial stakeholders group because of their charter. Even though perhaps we both have infrastructure and business related concerns because of the way their organization has decided to set themselves up. My organization, you know, perhaps couldn't be a member and vice versa. But I guess then the other issue is this is the organization that has been set up. The way to affiliate and to share your perspective is, from what we understood, this landscape. And if there's a new landscape that the community is going to encourage, and that's what we've talked to the SIC and the board about, you know, if they could describe, I mean, they appointed me to try to get more not-for-profits engaged. And we tried to get engaged, and frankly, it's been difficult to share a new voice in that group. If the idea is to allow new voices to have a foot, if there's a way to do that without creating constituencies, I'd love to hear that. But in order to get your voice to the board in a concise way, shared with the community in a concise way, it seems that that what we've created is, this is the mechanism for doing that. If there's a new mechanism, then we're open to that. But we're working with what's existing now. And I guess that's more like an academic question, like what's better? You're like, what are some other ways to do that and other ways to engage? I think that's an interesting question.
All right. Last question goes to Jeff. And yeah. Ladies, thank you for your time. Thank you very
thanks.
Much.
Yeah. I think
thank you very much for having
thank
us.
You.
Yeah, I think just to summarize, I think if I can, for what this group is, what we're really asking is, you know, to us, the difference between a for-profit and non-profit organization technically is that you don't distribute your funds at the end of the year, your surplus funds, to your shareholders, your owners. You use it to push back into the organization. That's really the definition of a nonprofit agency. So knowing that that's the distinction and that's the line, what are your needs, the differences between one, a company that disperses their excess revenue to their shareholders or owners versus putting it back in? What are those differences that specifically that would need your own stakeholder group? I think that's sort of the question I'm grappling with. I think from what I'm hearing from the others that they're grappling with as well. And if you could come back to us and maybe some sort of, well, you know, an answer to that, then, you know, I think that it would help us, because we can't figure, none of us have, you know, it seems like we're all asking the same exact question. And if you could come back to us on that, give you some time to think about it, I think it would be helpful.
Is this on? Yes. Mm-hmm. We've been taking notes at all of the meetings. With all of the meetings that we've attended today with the constituency groups, and we will definitely add that question to the list and circulate a document that addresses that question, because I know your time is valuable and you have an agenda to keep.
Thank you. Yeah, that would be very helpful if you wouldn't mind. Thank you for joining us. Bobby? All right, folks. Next on the agenda is the continuation of our discussion with the law enforcement community. Our friend Bobby Flame from the United States FBI is here, and he's brought a couple of colleagues with him. So I'm going to let them get settled, and then Bobby, I'll just give the floor to you, if I may.
You do look alike.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Bobby Flame. I work with the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, out of Washington, D.C. Also here is Fred Goudreau from the Quebec Police and Mark Moreau of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And Mason invited me to talk to you today just to describe some of the efforts that we've had since the last ICANN meeting in Brussels. We actually have coordinated. There were a couple of meetings that the registrars have actually been to. The ones that we have coordinated, or the one that we coordinated, was on September 28th in Washington, D.C., and it focused on broader issues such as the law enforcement recommendations that we submitted through the GAC. And pursuant to that, Mason and I agreed, and we also discussed this when we spoke to you. We had all of international law enforcement. When we spoke to you, we decided that it was a good idea to talk face-to-face. So we followed through with those plans, and on September 28th, we had a meeting with, it was about 70 people there. We had law enforcement agencies from the UK, Canada, Switzerland, Brazil, and obviously a lot from the United States. And we had a great number of registrars that attended. I believe it was about maybe 10 to 15. In addition to the registries, the top four registries, we had VeriSign, Afilias, Neustar, and also .org. So it was actually a very, very good discussion because, as Mason discussed earlier, you know, we wanted to move forward. It's the spirit of cooperation. We just want to make sure that we're doing our jobs and making sure that we're doing it the best way we can. And they got to see, hear our concerns. We provided case examples insofar as DNS abuse. We learned what they did, what they do. And we're going to try to move forward. We are planning another meeting in February because there was a lot of requests to actually have it in a non-American location to actually make it more international, which, of course, you know, we definitely want to do and we definitely want to support. So we have a tentative meeting scheduled for February 24th in Brussels, and it's going to be hosted by the European Commission. We've already started working with the Justice Department of the European Commission to get that done. And I guess it's in furtherance of what we talked about. We also brought up an SOP, which the registrars presented, so maybe we'll talk further about that, maybe the progress of the recommendations, developing better systems in which we can communicate and solve DNS abuse problems more internationally, more collectively and strategically, and also on a case-by-case basis. So I don't know, did you... Mark was there as well. Mark wasn't in Brussels, but he was on September 28th, and Fred was in Brussels, but he was not at the September 28th meeting. So for the meeting that we're going to have in February, we're hoping again for a very large international law enforcement presence, but even more particularly this time, a registrar presence from around the world as well. And we're hoping that we can continue to do this.
Just wanted to add to what Bobby was saying, that we have been trying to work very closely with the registrars and the registries, and really the law enforcement recommendations, it is being supported as well. It's not just the FBI. It's not just Canada. It's really some of the countries around the world that got together, and we do agree that we wanted to have these recommendations put forward. What we're hoping for is that it allows us, when we say that for yourself knowing your customers, it would help you in your business, but it would also help us as well in whenever there's some investigations. Certainly I've heard in these meetings there are some a lot of questions as to perhaps the value of it, why you need to do it and everything else, and I would agree that this is really the type of forum to be able to have those discussions, and hopefully in the end that there was going to be some agreement one way or another to move forward.
Okay. All right. Thank you both very much. Just let me add to Bobby's summary. Thank you for providing that. It's been a very enlightening and productive discussion that we've had with the law enforcement agencies over the past several months. And as I mentioned earlier in the meeting, this is the kind of interaction that as registrars, we're trying to look for, so as to take some of the pressure off. You know, that's coming from various areas of the community, especially as it relates to the RAA. You know, we're interested in, obviously we're all interested in cooperating with law enforcement to do something about online crime, but to do so in a way that minimizes the impact to our operations. And so we had good productive discussions about that. And in fact, I've been collecting feedback from you all since, and I owe that over to Bobby. So we have about 15 minutes in the agenda. So questions for our friends from the law enforcement. Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Bobby, looking ahead to February, have you guys started drafting an agenda? Are you envisioning something similar to what we had in September, or are you going in a new direction?
No, I think it's going to be in a similar vein. Obviously, I think this time it may have more of a European spin because we're in Europe, and I think maybe the European Union may have a few agenda topics that they would like to add. But I think it's basically going to be a continuation of what we started in September, and moving forward, maybe start to do a few more concrete things. But I know the European Union would like to put their little flavor on it. There's some issues with their legal system, privacy issues, the whole nine yards, which they are going to want to discuss. And we're probably going to come out with that agenda at the very the first week of January after the holidays.
Set.
I see on the agenda one bullet point item that we could discuss is the ICE seizures. I wanted to know if you guys would had a comment on that at all.
yeah, Mason warned me that might come up.
boom.
To be very honest with you, I other than what has been in the papers and what's been going on, I unfortunately don't know anything about it. I did talk to the Department of Justice just because I knew that that might come up, but it appears that it was, not appears, it was based on legal court orders. It was considered an asset seizure based on criminality, and that's all I can say. I don't know the case that ICE developed. I don't know why they did it. I don't know who they're cooperating with. I don't know basically the case specifics of that. So unfortunately, I can't give you that. ICE was at our September 28th meeting, and I know they've been at the other kind of law enforcement meetings, which the White House has hosted solely for online pharmaceuticals. Our meetings have been more general. It addresses the whole criminal problem, but the White House meetings have been strictly for the online pharmaceuticals, and ICE was there as well. And I did give their names over to Mason should he have any particular aspects or questions, but I haven't been in contact with them. They haven't given me any details in which they haven't given me any details because I haven't spoken to them at all. So unfortunately, although I know that was a concern, I can't speak to it firsthand.
So I can add a little because I did get in touch with ICE, and there wasn't a lot they could share either, but I do know there were some things in the press release they sent out about the seizure that obviously it's public information, but it was a long process, I think 6 months or more, where they went through and investigated sites that were, I guess, helping distribute counterfeit goods. And they cooperated with the RIAA, recording industry, and the MPAA, the film industry, and helped identify infringing sites, and then built the case, took it to a court, got an order. Got VeriSign to pull the names out. So I don't know a whole lot about anything else or the process on that, but that's what I do know. Jeff and then Rob.
Okay, thanks. I think part of it is I think one of the things, not a question but it's more of just to let you guys know that it's tough. Like, it's a little frustration on a lot of the registrar's part. Like, I was at the meetings, it was at the meetings in D.C., both at the large law enforcement meeting and at the White House meeting, and, we all discussed how we're going to work together and we're going to communicate, and then these seizures happen without even coming to the registrars. They went to the registry and seized the domain names. And, we really genuinely want to work together with you guys so that we don't have issues like this. And I know you do too. And, you come out here, you really extend a good effort. But just to, to let them know that it's tough and it's, for you guys to build this goodwill and then it comes out that, these seizures happen, without our knowledge and to our, when it's our customer base that it happens to. And I know that we had a couple of domain names that were seized in there. And, if we want to build the bridges, we got to really do that and try and adhere to it. And we can't have different groups going off on their, on their own without having, some explanation. They're not accountable to us. We're not expecting that. But just, if we really want to work together, then we can't just pay lip service to it. We truly do have to work together.
Okay. I was under the impression that although I know they work with the registries, that court orders did go to some of the registrars, but I'm, like I said, that's all I know from reading and talking to the Department of Justice. So
if I can, since I was in, we received, and I, I'm saying I'm not complaining that, you know, about saying, oh, these weren't right, you know, the seizures weren't right. That's not the point. We received them, I believe, 4 days after the actual seizures happened. We received the notification from the DOJ. So it's, you know, I think that's sort of the frustrating point is we received everything much way after the fact, and it was in the news first, and our customers were contacting us. So that's sort of, if we're going to work together to push forward. And I know this is one event, but if it becomes a pattern, then it's going to be hard for us to, you know, to really believe in that this collaborative process is going to work.
Well, if they did not attempt to deal with you ahead of time and it came as a surprise, then, you know, that would be bad. But I know that in a lot of the cases, that's not the case. So, you know, we certainly want to cooperate.
Yeah. Okay. So I think part of these. Yeah, I got your. I think some of the issue is where registrars. If the action is taken at the registry level, registrars are left answering questions from customers that we don't have any information about.
Right.
And customers come to us and say, "What happened?" Yeah. Well, we don't know. And okay. You know, what are you going to do to prevent somebody from taking my name? Right.
Right.
Rob.
And I just want to follow up on that point because I think it's made your life a lot harder, and you may not realize it. So what? What the world has learned from this and is learning rapidly is that anything that U.S. law enforcement wants to take down in the comm domain, they can because the registry is in the U.S. And they don't care where the registrant is or what law he's under or where the registrar is and what law they're under. So I know that a lot of GTLD applicants have been talking to us about how do we make sure we're not under U.S. jurisdiction. So it's bad timing, unfortunately. But I can tell you our clients are also worried about what's the next thing they're going to pick on. Like now that ICE has done this, what's the next U.S. law enforcement, even at a state level or a local level, that's going to attack the registry, regardless of where the registrar or client is? And so I think you've got a major problem forming here. I don't have a solution for it, unfortunately. But I would encourage you to start talking internationally. I know Mark's with you from Canada, but I think you've got a jurisdictional problem that's about to rear its head. And I certainly see, you know, similar things going on with the WikiLeaks problem, which just too damn coincidental and poor timing, I guess, on this, you know, to do with the new GTLD process. So I don't know what the answer is, but I know of no registrar that was informed before they did it because, you know, the list we're on, we're scrambling trying to figure out how'd they do it. You know, and then, okay, clearly they went to VeriSign, they changed the DNS service, they locked the domain so the registrar can't change it. But our registrants come screaming at us saying, what's going on? And we don't know. So if you're asking for our help, which you always have been, please, you know, use that as a last resort if the registrar is in China and not dealing with you. Please don't try and end run around us because it's easier for you, and then expect us to help you the next day because it throws us in a bad spot between our clients and you.
Yeah. Okay, no, those are excellent points, and I think that's the purpose of coming here. And, you know, this is relatively, you know, for us, this is new insofar as having our symposiums or sessions, if you will. So, no, that's very encouraging, and we, you know, definitely support that. And like I said, unfortunately, you know, ICE, you know, they were there, and I can't speak for them, so I don't know the specifics, but your general point of what you're trying to say is well taken.
All right, thanks, Rob. Anyone else? Come on, the cops are here. We don't get to question them very often. James?
Yeah, I just wanted to, it's James Blatel. I just wanted to second what Rob was saying about a jurisdictional problem, but I think that there's a technical problem going on underneath as well because there's now talk of alternate routes being distributed through peer-to-peer networks, and those have never worked in the past, but we may have just given them a reason to find, you know, to make it work, and so some, you know, activity that was happening in the shadows has now just gone completely off the radar. So.
No, I read that article about that, and you know, we're becoming familiar with that. So, no, I agree with you. You don't want to squeeze someplace and have it come out the other. That makes it even more difficult for you.
Anyone else? JC?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that it wasn't one article, but several, and that from the looks of it, this alternative thing may have the critical mass that has been lacking for so many years and that, as James said, has been underground before. So I think there has never been a better time to actually work together and not make us part of the problem, because if we are, as you said, the one squeezed, the problem won't be solved, but only reappear elsewhere, where there would be no accountancy and where you wouldn't know who to talk to, basically.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. Bobby, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you coming by. And I guess at least some of us will see you in Europe in February. All right?
Great.
Thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was. Rick, thanks. I was about to ask if you were ready to go, but apparently you are.
I'm ready to go.
Good job. Okay. All right, so agenda-wise, we have Rick, who's going to talk about Security and Stability Advisory Committee advisory number 40, which impacts us. We have our meeting scheduled with the registries in 20 minutes from now, and that's closed to... Oh, sorry. Bob, you have a question? Bob, can you... Okay. Okay. All right. Thanks for the input, Bob. All right. Rick is going to talk about SAC 40, and then the registrar-registry joint meeting is closed to only registrars and registries. So we're going to take a short break when Rick is done, excuse folks who don't meet that criteria, and then we'll reconvene, and we'll finish our meeting there. Tim, did you have something? Sorry.
I was just wondering if the closed meeting is when all the misanthropes are going to get together.
Yeah, that's right. That is. Good job. All right, Rick, the floor is yours.
How's this thing work? There we go. It's an odd microphone setup. So I'm Rick Wilhelm from Network Solutions. I'm here wearing my SAC hat. I sit in the SAC along with a couple other folks who are also in the registrar stakeholder group. Bruce is on there. Jeremy Hitchcock is on there and such. And we've been working recently, the SAC has, and has published a paper called SAC 040. And 040 is, it's 044, and it's a follow-on to 040, and this is really a guide that the SAC put together to protect, encourage registrants to take measures to protect their accounts in order for them to maintain control of their domain names and all the associated things. And we're going to spend a few minutes here talking about it, and we'll take some questions. This isn't sort of a quick summary, but we'll kind of get into these in each slide. In the paper, which is about 30 pages long or so, and clearly enthralling reading for some sort of folks, I'm sure Tim would enjoy it. It talks about the kinds of threats. First off, we sort of identify the threats that registrants are going to see. Everyone can sort of conceptually understand that you need to maintain control over your username and password for your registrant account. But then we also go into some detail around what other kinds of bad things can happen other than your account getting taken over, right? So once they get a hold of your account, as folks in this room certainly well know, we talk about how you can have your whois information updated, have your DNS information changed, and such. And really one of the points that we try to make in the paper is that if you're lucky, as a registrant and you lose control of your account somehow, your website going down and your email stopping working and things breaking loudly and violently is probably about the best outcome that you can have, because a much more dangerous and sinister thing is that if you lose control of your account and then subsequently the perpetrator is sort of gradually making changes, like changing addresses on their contacts, such that you start to be not getting all the information from the registry or the from the registrar, and then subsequently they can take control of the name, even, and you might not lose it until you transfer it out. Yes. Yeah, so that's if you change the DNS settings. So the question was, what does it mean, unauthorized DNS transfer? And so that's if they change the DNS settings to have it be the DNS be hosted somewhere else. And so oddly, what someone can do is take control of your DNS and shift it to where it sort of behaves in exactly the same way, but is no longer under your control, you as the registrant. And then abruptly or quietly or even in sort of a flash, sort of a fast flux mode, shift your DNS on and off and to where it looks like an intermittent network problem, right? And so insufficiently sophisticated registrants could not recognize what's going on and be not in control of their DNS and experience all sorts of weird problems and such. So we go through these. We talk about how you could have a situation where the registrant loses control, their ability to renew the name, or someone gets in sort of man-in-the-middle attacks on those sorts of things. So we spend some time on the threat landscape. And then we talk about really what sort of things should registrants be doing to protect their accounts. So the basic and most obvious one is have a strong password. Don't email it around, share login information. But one of the things that we mentioned is that, registrars have a tempo of correspondence that they have with their registrants. And the registrant should be aware of this tempo, like renewal notices and things like that, and use that to sort of trigger some internal processes about making sure that the right people are listed on email distributions and things like that. So that's what we mean by when we say triggering internal checks. Ownership proof. So Dave Piscatello is an ICANN staffer that helps us on SSAC. And one of the things, he lives in the low country of South Carolina, and he has this story about how he has what he calls his hurricane box. And so he has sort of this, I don't know if it's literally a box or a, sort of imagine like a pirate's chest, sort of like where he's got all his kind of important papers, because apparently when you live in South Carolina or anywhere that has hurricanes, you've got to be ready to evacuate sort of at a moment's notice. And so what he has, he's got this hurricane box where he's got all of his, valuable papers, his car title and all this stuff. And we talk about how the people should maintain their ownership proof in a very safe place, because for businesses, we talk in the paper about how they should really be understanding and treating domain names as assets, and to sort of treat them lightly is to be sort of operating at a certain degree of peril. To this end, we are really also encouraging registrants to diversify their points of contact, so that they use, for example, role accounts on emails when they have inbound correspondence coming in from the registrar, as opposed to having it be sent to Billy the IT guy or something like that. And then also we encourage smaller companies to adopt some change control processes. For example, when an employee leaves a company, companies have gotten good, no matter how small, they've gotten very good at having a process in place where they stop paying that employee. And so one of the things that we recommend is, so for example, check to make sure, and you take back the guy's key, right? He doesn't have that. And so we say, well, make sure that you can use these as an opportunity, make sure that you have, that he's not on any password list for registrar account access. So that's a change control and such. And then we spend some time talking about what can registrants do to identify these
changes that could be happening, talk about who is and DNS changes. Obviously, sufficiently sophisticated users can do a little bit of, you know, PHP, Python kind of programming and do this themselves. Or you can subscribe to services on the web that will do this for free or for pay. We talk about them going through and monitoring what their data is and the who is and the DNS, looking at when what the understanding the registrar and registry statuses that they'd be able to pull out of the who is, and most importantly, perhaps, looking at the sort of last change timestamps. In talking about this, we've been using the example of that with your online bank. Probably everybody in here does some bit of online banking. When you log in, at least in my bank, they say, you know, you last logged in on this day, at this time. And sort of when you see that, it kind of makes you think about, was I really logging in then? So here we're kind of encouraging registrants to not just be sort of sitting back and assuming that everything's okay, but to actively check the status of their registrations, sort of like people go, and even though your car's not broken down, you know, every 3,000 miles you take it to Jiffy Lube and they put it up on the rack and check the thing over. And you do that so that you don't end up being surprised by developing problems later on. So, and then the last thing we talk about in the paper is we encourage registrants to be researching features and capabilities of the particular registrars that they use. We want them to be asking questions. We put a list in there of questions that we would ask. One of the things that we did in this paper that, you know, I was pretty passionate about was having this list be descriptive as opposed to prescriptive, right? So we talked in there about in the paper about how there's a wealth of choice available to registrants, and that's certainly and completely appropriate. But that helping registrants to understand the variability in the market depending on what they're looking for. So that's kind of a summary. You know, it's entertaining reading for certain folks. So with that, why don't we kind of? I'll be quiet and we'll do some questions.
Anyone? Bob?
Yeah, thank you. Bob Mountain, A-Media. This is working. Yeah, did you do any quantitative studies? Did you have any numbers on how many respondents, just to get a scale, so I understand what the problems were, but how prevalent they are?
The question was, I guess you don't have to repeat the question in this meeting. The ESSAC did not undertake a study. Very kind of explicitly, this was more of a whiteboard exercise as opposed to an empirical one, and trying to educate people about what was out there, as opposed to we weren't trying to identify a problem. SAC 040 listed the three or four very high profile account hijacking instances that have taken place over the last 3 years or so. And so one of the things that when we talked about, we considered it, but we were sort of very suspicious of our ability to come to an accurate count about this, precisely because usually people will not stand up and say, yeah, by the way, I lost control of my DNS, and that's why my website was down. So we were sort of skeptical of the efficacy of some sort of a study like that. That's not to say that it's not perfectly viable research for someone to do. We also, in this paper, did not state that there is a problem, right? The paper says, hey, registrants, here's stuff you can do. So that help answer a question?
Matt?
Yeah, thanks. Rick, I just want to take a minute to commend you guys for the work that you put in on the paper. I thought it was great. But I guess the question I have is, other than issuing and posting on the site, which I think is great, have you guys talked about how to get the information out to a wider kind of registrant community? Because, you know, there's great points in there, but I just worry that, you know, unless folks are out at the ICANN site, you know, and know enough to look at the ESSAC stuff, that to your typical registrant, the stuff isn't going to get out there.
Yeah, that's a great point, Matt. And the funny thing is that about a month ago, maybe it was 2 months ago, we had the ESSAC retreat, and we, you know, the group gave up, and I talked about this paper, and the very same comment came up from the assembled SSAC group there. And so as we were talking about it, you know, I sort of said, well, in Cartagena, how about if I chat with Mason and get on the docket? So this is a step in that. So part of this is to have the, you know, the SSAC reaching out to the registrar stakeholder group and talking about the results and really helping to spread the word among the registrars, because the kind of registrars that are sitting in this room are, as we are fond of saying, the responsible ones. And so by getting this information to the registrar stakeholder group, we're hopeful that each of you, and myself being a registrar included, will be able to take this and package it in a way that's interesting to our customers and present it to them in a constructive manner. And so this is part of that outreach. As far as the SSAC is concerned, we're very much open to input on if you or anyone else here has suggestions about other places that we should go to take this message. We've talked about working with the ICANN communications and PR team as an example, and that's something else we're working on. So that help?
Yeah. Any other questions? All right. Rick, thank you very much. All right, folks. Yep. All right, our friends from the registries are here, and we're going to go into closed session. If you're not with a registry or a registrar, I'd ask you politely if you would excuse yourself, and we'll convene. We'll immediately reconvene once the room clears out. Hey, are you guys from the registries? If it might be easier if you don't mind, if you maybe come down here and sit all together, because it's a lot easier to manage the microphone to talk.